is also very much concerned with that relationship between passion and duty. Can it ever come out even? Virgil ultimately doesn't think so. Virgil ultimately, I think, thinks that the world is a tragic place. You can't put it all together. But in a way, that story between Dido and Aeneas is sort of rewritten. Sort of rewritten. Maybe to use the terminology that we gave before, is typologically related to the story of Dante and Beatrice. Okay? Because it's sort of interesting, Dido dies in the story, but then Aeneas gets to see her once again in the underworld. Right? In fact, he wants to kind of make up with her, and she just sort of turns her back on him and walks away. Well, there's a kind of interesting parallel between the death of Beatrice and then the meeting of Dante and Beatrice at the end of Purgatory. And instead of walking away, what Beatrice does is ultimately become Dante's guide, but also becomes his judge, his confessor, his friend, his savior, and all kinds of other good things at the time. So that it's almost as though what Dante is doing is rewriting the story of Dido and Aeneas and suggesting that that was not the only possible ending. Or, better yet, the circumstances have changed that allowed for a more positive ending for himself.
Generalization. Whenever somebody in literature interrupts you, the odds are pretty good they're going to talk about sex.
Okay.
True. I'm used to this. I get cut off all the time in my serious discourse here.
Well, somebody's got to bring these things up.
At any rate, the point that I wanted to make in introducing Augustine, and we certainly have several points to make about him, is the fact that the relationship of Augustine to his text is, I think, important with regard to what we just said about how Dante uses Virgil and Virgil's technique. The important thing to say in that respect with regard to Augustine's Confessions, the work we're going to focus on, the sort of spiritual autobiography of this great Christian writer who lived from the mid-4th to the almost the mid-5th century, from 354 to 430, is that in the Confessions, he's primarily telling the story of his life up to about the age of 30. And a good deal focuses on his years before that. However, he's writing it many years after that, when he's in his mid-40s, and he's a Christian and a bishop, going back and looking at his early years, his teenage years, his years in which he was a pagan and associated with various pagan sects. And therefore, it is important to remember that this sort of two-vision view of Augustine, the Augustine, the character in the Confessions, and the Augustine, the writer, looking back on his own somewhat misspent youth, is an important perspective that Dante will wed with this perspective of Virgil that Ron talked about as sort of the major way that the voice of Dante becomes clear in the poem.
It's also interesting when you think about Augustine that he's similar to Dante in that he too has read some of the same texts. Well, what texts? First of all, of course, the whole story of the Confessions is the story of Augustine learning how to read the Bible correctly. All right? In a way, that's Dante's story too. He can't tell the story of the Commedia unless he too has learned how to read the Bible correctly. But in addition, he goes to some of the same texts from classical authors as well. Most important, he tells us about his own reading of Dido and what he thought of the story of Dido and Aeneas.
It's interesting because he tells the story that as a boy living in the Roman Empire, he would have read and did read the Aeneid. And the way that he tells that story in Book 1 of the Confessions is very interesting. He said, I read about the wanderings of this fellow Aeneas, but I didn't understand my own wanderings. I wept for the death of Dido, but I did not know to weep because I too was dying separated from God. To put it real simply, I suppose, we could say that Augustine, as he started his reading, got the plot okay. But he had no way of understanding it beyond the level of plot, and he had no way of relating what those stories were about to his own life. And so, certainly, part of Augustine's journey from the reading of the Aeneid to the reading of Cicero and so on is this journey in learning how to read a book, how to make it relevant and meaningful to my own life, how to relate it to my own experience and know how to use it as a guide for the way I live.
Augustine, of course, also grows up reading Virgil in school and then comes across a number of other texts from the pagan classics. Cicero is the one who teaches him to go for truth, okay, rather than surface fun and games. And then later on, he learns from the Platonist philosophers, as he calls them, people who were in a kind of line of descent from Plato. And he says, basically, without those Platonist philosophers, I would not have discovered Christ. They were a necessary, perhaps not a sufficient, but a necessary step along the way. Now, in looking at all of this stuff, he therefore very explicitly asks the question, when I become a Christian, how much of these guys can I keep? All right? Do I have to get rid of all of that pagan stuff? And his answer was no, emphatically no. He can keep a good deal. And for us, it seems to me that the final point we would make is simply this. Dante, too, is someone who is interested in synthesizing the pagan tradition and the Christian tradition, in looking at the two of them and saying, what is it that they have in common? So we've done a little bit on the Bible, a little bit on Virgil. Augustine is the figure who shows how those two are able to come together.
And to use Augustine's own phrase, in regard to this question, as a kind of summing up, pagans can tell you where you want to go, but they can't show you how to get there.